Welcome back to the Villain Edit, where Monty Ashley and Ryaz Hall talk about the reality shows they watch. I'm Monty Ashley.
I'm Ryaz Hall.
That's not how the show gets introduced.
No, it's not really.
It's because I got rid of that thing where I implied that I thought these shows were dumb.
And now we don't know where to go. We're lost.
The point is, we watch these television shows, and not enough people we know watch them, so we're going to talk about them to you.
You lucky, lucky people.
If you also watch them, you can pretend you're talking to us, and we're just jerks who won't let you get a word in edgewise.
Which is pretty much true.
Here, let's roleplay it a second. So, what did you think of this week's RuPaul's Drag Race?
Well, I thought that the morning show challenge was
talking to the listener. See how it works?
I got it.
All right, so RuPaul's Drag Race. This was the morning show challenge, right?
It was.
They got divided into two big groups. And what I thought was really interesting right off the bat was that Aja was all whiny at the beginning of the show because Valentina won, and Valentina just won because she's pretty. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But Aja was one of the team captains and first picked Valentina.
Right. Because you want to pick the person that always wins.
You would think so, but so often in shows like this, people are like, I don't see why that person wins. They're terrible. I won't want anything to do with them.
Yeah, no.
No, I'm just sensible. If you keep beating me, now you're on my team. Now what? Beat me now.
Let's see.
Nina was the last person picked, which I was surprised at, because I think she's got talent.
She's amazing. Nina Modena?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. I don't know why Pharaoh was picked first.
I think they may have imagined there was going to be a weather girl element, and Farrah feels to me like somebody who'd be a good weather girl.
It's true. Nina may not... Maybe they're worried that Nina cannot pull off looking like a real human.
This is drag. You don't gotta look like a real human. You gotta look like a funny human. One of the pairings... So each team had six people, and in that six people, everybody was paired up and had to do a little... I'm going to call it a comedy routine.
I guess they had to do like a little segment, like if you were watching The View or something, and they cut away and say, here's this segment. It was kind of a little segment show, and they each had a different segment. So there's a crafting segment, a cooking segment, and some segments that I am not sure what they were supposed to be because they were so poorly done. Yeah.
Now, one of the pairings was Cynthia Lee Fontaine and Charlie Hides. And Charlie is allegedly a perfectionist, wants to get everything right. And kept giving Cynthia notes and saying, be sure to do... The judges, they're going to really watch out for mistakes. So you have to do everything the way it is in the script.
And Cynthia is well aware that the kooky Latina stereotype she's playing up has to mispronounce words. Because that's what's funny. That's one of the funny things about it. Charo still does it, and she's been doing it for like 90 years.
Yeah.
It's the thing.
One way you can tell that Cynthia is smart is that... She kind of nodded along with Charlie, say, yeah, uh-huh, right, see, yep. And then when it came time to actually do it, nah, all that's out the window. And everything was still perfectly, you could tell what the character was trying to say, and there was just enough malapropisms and swapped grammar to make it funny, but not so much it was incomprehensible.
Charlie did not care for that.
Charlie spent a lot of time during the sketch looking distressed and actually tapping the note card where the script was written.
Yes, it was pretty sad. And then when it was Charlie's turn to talk, Charlie was like a wooden plank.
And that's weird, because Charlie's thing is YouTube comedy, and...
YouTube comedy.
I thought Charlie would be able to put the jokes over better, but it's possible Charlie was just feeling discombobulated.
Because of not being in complete control? I don't know. I mean, I've seen Charlie's YouTube comedy. I don't particularly care for it.
Yeah.
But at least it's delivered.
Now, similarly, Nina and Eureka were teamed up. Nina, I think, followed Cynthia's lead and went way off script. Mostly
yeah,
by
they
adding...
were...
Go ahead.
They were doing a craft corner thing, and I think it was crafting with food.
Yeah.
It was. It's like, you can't afford a lace front wig, cook up some ramen, make yourself a little ramen wig.
Now, that's not a great joke, but they did the best they could with it. Nina added girl into every other sentence and just... Basically, the basic drag strategy. play up your character and
do what you can. I did enjoy in their sketch when they were trying to make hip pads and they just had some ham. So they were just stuffing ham in a pair of pantyhose that was on a mannequin. That was absolutely hilarious.
Yep. Both of them could tell something was funny and kept doing it.
Right. They're like, oh, this is going to get laughs. Let's stick with this angle. And I thought they did, of all of them, I thought they did one of the best jobs. They were memorable, and they were funny. They made me laugh out loud, and I don't think anyone else did.
Well, Shay and Sasha made me laugh. They were the other teams crafting.
What were they crafting?
I don't remember, but I remember that they appeared to just completely throw out the script. If they were on script, they're both amazing actors, because they were very naturalistic.
Oh, cool.
But I don't remember any of the details.
I see a note here that says Team Aja was okay. Well, except for Aja.
Yeah. I'm still worried about Aja.
Yeah, she's not there yet.
Aja spent most of this episode in her own head obsessing about why don't people like me? It's more like everybody always likes me. What's the judge's problem? And it was kind of taking it out on Valentina. And that led to a great moment where Aja went to Valentina and said, you're a really good person. I'm sorry. And Valentina said, I'll accept your apology in a minute. Let me finish my makeup because it's more important.
Which was awesome.
Aja took in exactly the right spirit and laughed and laughed. And that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
There was also a very, another serious moment in this episode where...
Oh, yeah, they were talking about how Charlie being old, because that's Charlie's shtick, is being old.
He's 52.
He's the same age I am. He's not that old. But he lived through the AIDS epidemic.
And it's hard to overstate for younger people
what that was.
That's an entire generation of people.
Yeah, that was... I mean, I'm the same age as Charlie. I saw that happen, too, and it was horrific.
And just the... And in terms of this show, there were drag queens, and... So many of them are gone.
Uh-huh. It's like an entire generation of inspiration is gone. The things you could have learned from those people if they had been alive. It's really...
Anytime you're watching like a documentary, like we watched that documentary Joe Bryath AD about this weirdo named Joe Bryath.
That was an awesome documentary. Absolutely should see it if you get the chance.
And... You know, you're going along like, wow, this guy's, I guess he's kind of a glam rocker. No, okay, he's got a cabaret night. And then you realize, oh, he's got a cabaret night in New York and it's 1980. And, oh, God.
Yep. It's like when I'm watching that, I'm like, oh, it's the 80s and he's doing this great gay cabaret and he seems really happy. And then you immediately, your first thought is, he's not going to make it till the end of this movie. And it's heartbreaking. It's the same thing when I was watching that Klaus Nomi documentary. Yeah. It's just, it's awful. It's a terrible thing that happened, and I was kind of glad that they addressed it.
Yeah. Like, it puts the show in context more than just saying, oh, they're Vegas queens, oh, he's a New York queen.
Right. I wonder if they're going to do that every week, because last week, the week before that, they did the thing about where they talked about Pulse.
It is sad to say, but there is no shortage of tragedies that can be brought up that are relevant to drag queenery.
That is true. And speaking of tragedies, Asia's makeup is just not getting any better.
It's true.
I can see that she's trying, but...
And she seems baffled by it.
Yeah, she doesn't understand. It's like she doesn't see it as a problem.
And it kind of is, man. She's very good at lip syncing, so I don't think she's going to go home right away, but she... What I'm hoping happens is she takes notes from the other queens, many of whom seem to like her and want to help her.
Yeah, even in that Untucked, when she was all upset at Valentina, after she stopped freaking out, everybody was like, okay, this is what's going on, and we need to help you through it. And that's unusual for this show.
Yeah. Jumping to the results of this episode, in the team that wasn't Team Aja, Team Trinity... Charlie screwed up a couple of things, did not take the blame for one of the major ones, which was they were interviewing some starlet from a show. I have no idea.
Yeah, they were interviewing a starlet, and Charlie suddenly decided they had talked too long and cut the interview off.
Just suddenly said, well, thanks for coming. And then there was this long, awkward silence.
And everybody looked around because they had no idea the sketch was over. Yeah. And it wasn't over. They had given her no time at all. And Charlie's like, what?
And Trinity and Peppermint were kind of playing the hosts. And they're supposed to wrap it up and say goodbye to the camera and all that. You know, like we do so professionally at the end of every podcast.
Yes, we're so good at that.
And in the judging, Trinity and Peppermint took the blame for it. And it really looked like it was Charlie's fault.
Yeah, it was absolutely Charlie's fault.
So, the bottom two were Charlie and Trinity. And they were lip-syncing to...
Trinity was in trouble because she played her morning host as they said she was too mean.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they've watched a lot of morning TV in Florida. Because those hosts...
Go on.
They're pretty bitchy.
Yeah.
And the outfit she was wearing is even an outfit that was worn by a specific morning host in Florida.
I do want to say that my favorite criticism was given to Charlie, which is, you put the ain't in entertainment. does not make sense.
That was a great line, though.
Somebody on this show, and I think it's RuPaul, really likes puns that almost work.
Yeah, it's Ru.
So... the lip syncing. Trinity did a great job. Lots of effort.
Throwing her hair around, cartwheels, death drops. She didn't tear her wig off, but she would have if she thought she needed to.
And Charlie just stood there and gave a
and moved his lips helpfully. It was very much a watermelon motherfucker situation.
Occasionally rubbed his crotch a little. I thought that was a weird move. Kind of did one of these.
Oh, yeah. Like he was a sexy nightclub chanteuse with crabs. Yeah.
And he did an interview where he said, well, I'm not a lip-syncing performer. And was your plan to never be in the bottom?
His plan was that he's a live singer and he thinks lip-syncing is below him.
Well, then so is the show.
Exactly. No one said you couldn't sing live. Just sing the same song at the same speed it's being played.
That would be amazing.
Seriously.
Everybody would be blown away by that.
I don't even think they're mic'd for that. You could totally do it. No one would know.
Sing louder. Overshadow it. Sing your own song. Yeah. Do something.
Do anything. Move. Do not stand there like you're stuck in the headlights.
The queens at the back of the room were shouting at Charlie, do something. And he didn't, and he went home. And you know what? Deserved to.
Yes.
Just gave up, and I'm mad at him.
Well, we didn't even talk about the nighty challenge.
Oh, well, yeah, that's because the runway challenge was so fast.
It didn't really make a difference.
You saw the outfits for as long as it took to read their names. It was just, Shea Coulee, Peppermint,
Yeah, they ran a little too long on the...
I liked all that stuff.
Yeah.
Now, going as one does from drag queens to crazy makeup.
Crazy makeup?
Face off.
Oh!
Bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum,
bum.
Bum, bum. Is that
the theme song? That is not the face off theme.
That might be our theme song.
You think we've written a theme song, do you?
No, I mean, if we've got it right here, we can hear it again. Look.
Bum, bum, bum. That's not ours, honey.
All right. It says it's public domain. So, we're down to four people in Face Off.
Yes.
Sig, Neutron, George, Troster. I regret doing that because I don't know Emily and Tyler's last names off the top of my head.
And Emily and Tyler.
It's the two teams of two that were clearly the best the whole season.
Yes.
Like, this is the four I wanted to see. And it occurred to me while watching this, because one of these four is going to go home, the other three will go to the finale.
Right.
But whenever they have a finale, old contestants come back to be teams of helpers.
And since they've already done team challenges this year,
everybody knows how to work together. And specifically, whoever goes home is certainly going to be on the team of the person they used to be a teammate with. Like, if Sig had gone home, he's going to be on George's team.
Right, or if George had gone home, he would be on Sig's team.
Which means I feel that whoever's teammate gets eliminated in this episode has a huge advantage in the finale.
Because, I'm not sure about that.
Well, because they're used to working together.
Okay.
What you're going to have is... Well, I'll just go read to it. Tyler went home.
What?
Tyler went home.
I can't believe you've spoiled the show.
And that means, in the finale, Emily gets to work with Tyler, who she's really good with. Meanwhile, Sig and George are split up from their soulmates.
Soulmates?
Ask them. They'll back me up on this.
Dude, I've seen the Instagrams. I know.
Oh, did you know that they've done one of those James St. James transformation videos?
No, but I'm definitely going to watch that now.
Right?
Those are three people I greatly enjoy.
Oh, yeah. That's, in fact, the midpoint between RuPaul's Drag Race and Face Off.
Oh,
if you enjoy both absolutely. Those shows, definitely look up on YouTube James St. James transformation videos, in which James St. James, legendary club kid turned
legendary whatever club he kid is and now, raconteur.
He might be a media mogul.
I don't think he's a media mogul. I think he's raconteur.
He has something to do with Worlds of Wonder, which is doing pretty well for itself.
Well,
anyway, he has people come on and apply makeup to him to turn him into other things, and frequently they are Drag Race contestants who turn him into a beautiful lady, or Face Off contestants who turn him into a horrible monster. It's fun.
Yeah.
I like those videos. Face Off, they were making gargoyles.
So everybody had to draw a random blueprint, which by blueprint they mean picture of a building.
Yeah, it was not a blueprint. It's a cutaway three-quarters view that just happens to be white ink on blue paper.
Right. But they called it a blueprint because the printer used blue ink.
Yeah.
I guess. And they got a different architectural style. Tyler got Victorian, which you would think would be a lot of that frosting-looking stuff they get along the edges. Whatever they call that.
What?
Never mind.
What? No, I demand that you explain yourself.
What is it called? Gingerbread. The decorations on the edges of Victorian houses is called gingerbread.
Okay.
Not frosting. I just wanted frosting because it goes on gingerbread.
Sig got Russian Renaissance, which is very garishly colored contrasting patterns and onion domes.
Pretty much, yeah.
Emily got
Art Deco,
which
actually has gargoyles on it, which is a big advantage for her.
Like, you've seen Ghostbusters. Remember those big, giant
eagle things that they're standing on?
No, the dogs, the big old hellhounds.
Oh, you're right. Those started out as gargoyles.
Yeah.
It's true. And George got totally screwed, if you ask me.
George got deconstructivism, which is, I think, just Frank Gehry.
Yeah, it's basically he had a Frank Gehry challenge.
We've got a Frank Gehry building in Seattle. It's called the MoPop, formerly the Experience Music Project. And it is a big old hunk of nonsense.
Yeah, it is a hunk of nonsense. And the inside, there's no right angles in it.
It doesn't even have
the hundreds of Tindalos are going to come at you from any corner. There's Lovecraft all over it.
It doesn't have flat roofs, which I think is going to make it hard to stick a gargoyle anywhere.
That's true. There wasn't any space to put a gargoyle.
Oh, incidentally, I saw some people saying this on the internet, and I do agree. These people were actually making grotesques, not gargoyles, on the grounds that there were no rain spouts.
Right. At no point did any of their models vomit up water, which I think would have been a great touch, but apparently not.
Apparently, that would get in the way of the latex and paint and stuff. I guess.
So, gargoyles. Emily decided that because there's a lot of eagles in Art Deco architecture, she'd do like a bird hybrid gargoyle.
Which makes sense, because everybody's supposed to add wings and stuff.
Oh yeah, your gargoyles had to have wings. Tyler looked at pictures of Gothic churches and not pictures of Victorian houses.
He looked at what he was given, I think. I mean, they don't let them surf the internet. They have a specific dossier. That's why he... But one of the things he was looking at was the Parliament in England?
Yeah. And I felt like he was looking more, especially when he started sculpting, it was more Gothic.
Yeah. Well, I think he just knows what a gargoyle looks like and just did a gargoyle. And I thought it was a pretty good gargoyle.
It was. But it had that same shape face he's been using on everything, which has the pointy chin and the sticky outy cheekbones.
He's not doing it every time.
It's kind of a leaf-shaped face.
Not like that one guy from a few seasons ago who really did the exact same face every time.
Oh, that guy.
But Tyler is kind of going for the same expression and shapes, whether his face is made out of wood or stone or whatever.
I felt like his gargoyle looked like his galactic delegate with a different face job.
Yeah.
With a different paint job, I mean.
I think that's true.
Anyway, so that's what he made.
George, faced with the challenge of making a gargoyle that matched a building of twisted metal,
basically said, I'm going to make a twisty-faced abstract robot guy.
And it looks, it's aggressively asymmetrical, but it kind of makes sense when you look at it.
I really liked it. I thought it was great. I really liked the back of it. It looked like the back of the Experience Music Project.
Yeah. And the judges, especially V, really liked his color choices, which were silver and then a bit of blue on some of the curves, but not all.
Yeah.
They did not like this one giant gold horn he had.
And they did not like his wing, which was basically a sheet.
A big sheet of foam, slightly
bent. Spray-painted
bent.
Silver and tied to the guy's back because he ran out of time.
Well,
and because he knew that it's a makeup challenge and that the makeup was more important.
And to be fair, deconstructivism is a nonsense form for this. Glenn Hetrick openly said he would have run screaming from this challenge.
Yeah.
So like,
it's like, I wouldn't have known what to do with that. I would have run off. I would have burned it to the ground.
Right. What is a wing equivalent of this thing? I think George did it as well as he could.
Yeah.
With that thing. Emily did as well as she could with Art Deco, and that meant her thing came out looking great.
Yeah, but at one point, but at the end of day one, Emily had nothing. She started to do a face, and then Mr. Westmore came in and told her that it wasn't working, it was too human. And then she took it off and she tried to redo another face that was more beaky and it didn't work. And finally, on the second day, she actually called everybody that was still competing together.
I don't think she called them. I think they ran over to look for themselves.
I think, well, it was the first day. It's when they opened the door. They all went in and went over to her piece. I'm sure they had talked about it the night before.
Yeah, that's true.
And they all went over to help her.
Like,
and they all gave her really good advice. Like, maybe make that narrower, make this longer.
George specifically said, try thinning out the brow so that the model can do more expression. And it is my favorite thing about this show, that people take time out of their own time to help each other out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even during this, which is the final challenge, Tyler was running over to help Emily clean the clay out of her molds when it wouldn't come out.
By the way, speaking of Mr. Westmore...
and other shows we watch.
The Westmores are a legendary makeup family, which is why Michael and Mackenzie Westmore are both here.
Right.
Interestingly enough, Mackenzie's uncle Monty Westmore was recently fictionalized in an episode of Feud, Betty and Joan.
It's true. Monty Westmore was Joan Crawford's makeup artist for years and one of her few close friends.
He was the guy giving her eyelashes and having her pick which one she would use.
Yeah.
That's a Westmore in that episode.
Yeah. We thought that was just
kind of cool and related. We haven't talked about Sig.
What Sig did...
Before we get to Sig, I want to say, before we saw Sig's, George was saying, I'm going to do all this weird stuff because I think it's better than just putting a building on a dude's head.
Right. And then Sig put a building on a dude's head, and it was magnificent.
The top of Sig's model's head, big old onion dome. Epaulettes, onion domes.
Yeah, and they each had different tile patterns on them that were beautifully painted. It looked like it would take a year to do that sculpt.
In the last couple episodes, Sig's doing a lot of really good detail work.
Mm-hmm.
More detail work than it seems possible in the time.
Yeah.
Which... I like that. I hope to see it in the finale.
Well, another nice thing that was that Sig was explaining that in order to get this detail work, he made his own tools out of epoxy.
Yeah, he makes an
epoxy clay.
He makes an epoxy stamp that's exactly the right shape, and then he attaches it to a popsicle stick. And then poke, 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 poke.
But it's a lot of poking.
And then he has to paint it, and if he's decided to do a checkerboard pattern, he has to paint every other square.
Mm-hmm.
Although the epaulettes, both of them he managed to do with dry brushing.
Yeah. and they looked amazing. The face was really good. It wasn't made out of a lot of the other, all, pretty much all of the other gargoyles had faces made out of the materials from the challenge. The Victorian gargoyle was stone. The Art Deco one was gold metal.
The deconstructivism one also
was also metal. And Sig went in a different direction and made it flesh, so it was a monster face, but it had a beard, like a little pharaoh's beard that was also an onion dome.
Yeah.
And it had this really nice, like a tile pattern that was on the nose that Glenn Hetrick would not stop talking about, how it was the best thing ever.
Only thing he liked, and he brought it up several times.
He liked a lot of stuff, but he said that that was the key to that little spot on the bridge of the nose was the architectural key to the entire makeup. And it was a great makeup. It was crazy.
It was interesting seeing four different wing approaches, having just watched Cosplay Melee where they had to make wings.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite was Emily's, where she had a giant wooden fan.
Yeah, like a folding fan.
She apparently cut in half and then slightly trimmed and then hung from sticks that were sticking out from the shoulders. And they instantly looked like Art Deco eagle wings.
Yeah, it was great.
And as I said, Tyler went home, which I was sad about, but not as sad as if George had gone home and he was the other person in the bottom.
Yeah.
So the final three are going to be Sig, George, and Emily, which I think is a great top three.
Yeah. These are the three people that at the beginning of the season I wanted to see in the finale.
Now, finale predictions. We have not watched the finale. Don't know anything.
It hasn't aired yet.
I am expecting Emily to go crazy with some hair. She's been holding back for a few episodes, but this is her specialty, and it's time to blow people
away.
She
is amazing with hair. I want to see Cousin It.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want this to be incredible.
And next week is the finale of Face Off, but the good news is that a whole new season will start in June, which is very soon.
Yeah, I know. That's like, we get the finale, we had a couple weeks to retire, smoke a cigarette afterwards. Next thing you know, another Face Off.
I don't smoke.
Me neither.
No.
I was trying to sound like one of the cool kids.
Oh, sorry, I ruined it. You're trying to sound like one of the cool kids on your podcast?
No.
Talking about special effects makeup and monsters?
Yes, that's what cool kids talk about.
All right, Cosplay Melee, perhaps? They did superheroes.
Yep, they had four contestants. Tawanda from Florida, who likes to work in fabric as opposed to foam.
Well, go ahead, list them, and then I want to talk about that.
Aaron, a generic nerd from... It just says generic nerd, has only been cosplaying for like 2 years. Likes to do foam. Dare, who is a creative works in advertising and creative design. He tells us about that a lot, and he likes to build armor. He builds some really cool looking armor. And then James, who is from St. Louis. James is an ex-con who has changed his life through the power of cosplay and loves to design superheroes.
He had a really cool Iron Man painted for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah. Yeah, he had some great, great stuff in his portfolio, and he seemed like a genuinely nice person. Yeah.
He did bring up having been to prison a lot, but I think that's just the format.
Well, yeah, they made Dare talk about how he was an advertising guy all the time, too.
So before we get to this episode, I want to say really quick, I loved Tawanda's thing about how she prefers fabric to foam, because that's kind of the two types of cosplayer. There's the people who make foam, who use foam, and they do a lot of big architectural stuff around their body, make armor. And then there's the fabric cosplayers who are sewing things together and making costumes
that
way. Right,
making dresses and stuff. And an interesting thing was, I was at an anime convention last weekend, and now they're selling the body suits that are like the xenomorph suit things, printed with your character's armor.
What, like customized?
Yeah.
You can send them a picture?
No. Oh. It was like what's that game you like to play?
What?
What's that video game you've been playing lately?
Oh, Overwatch.
Like Overwatch, you would get like a full-on bodysuit that was already printed with all the stuff, so you just have to build the armor stuff over it if you want.
Yeah, people who make armor tend to have
something under there.
A piece of cloth at the bottom to glue things to.
Right.
And I kind of felt in this episode, nobody was entirely happy with their
Nobody
undersuit.
Was thrilled with their undersuits, but they did the best they could. So the first thing they had to do, round one, design your chest plate design.
Yeah, I make an emblem on a chest plate. Dare says, oh, that's the kind of thing I do in my spare time.
Right. Apparently that's what he does. He likes to design things. He designs chest plates. So he made a chest plate for his hero, who I believe was named Catman?
Wildcat.
Wildcat. Sorry.
Because bad guys broke in and, as he said a million times...
murdered his cat.
Brutally murdered his cat.
Yes.
Which, I guess that's an origin story.
But it's a little weak. He's just out to avenge his cat. And yeah. No offense to cat owners. I love my dog, but I don't know if I would turn into a crime-fighting vigilante to avenge him.
No, avenge the cat. That's classic storytelling structure.
Is it?
Yes, there's a whole book about it I read.
Okay.
Tawanda mentions that she's been in George Perez's Sirens comic book.
And they show a picture of her, and she has.
Yep. She was going to make something out of spandex and fishnets and LED lights. Which is daring. Normally LEDs...
Yeah, normally you see your LEDs in your foam armor, not your fabric armor. So I thought that was really cool. I was looking forward to see what she would do.
She kind of didn't do a lot.
Aaron made this chest plate with some gears in it, but it looked really unfinished and unpainted, and the gears were all painted the same color, so it couldn't really tell what they were. It was pretty bad.
And James said, I'm making the Guardian. Here's a quote. He had a really bad childhood, just like me.
Basically, James's backstory is exactly the same as his character's backstory.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with a Mary Sue. Comic books are about wish fulfillment. You might as well fulfill the wishes of the creator, if nobody else.
Exactly. I have no problems with it being a Mary Sue. I just thought it was funny because it was such an obvious one. But it's much better than avenging my cat. He wants to go out and be a superhero in the world and help people who had the same kind of background he had.
I'm here to avenge my cat. I'm going to go punch feline leukemia in the face.
Yeah. I felt like I'm on a vicious
vendetta against all coyotes.
I felt like James had the most heart of any of the competitors.
Yeah.
Aaron kept claiming his character was obsessed with ancient Egypt, but nothing at all in his costume design looked even vaguely Egyptian.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, we're used to people only making up enough backstory to justify whatever they put on their stuff. And he apparently had backstory that had nothing to do with the costume.
No, he was just a futuristic Egyptologist out fighting crime in his battle armor, like you get.
Futuristic Egyptologists are probably worse at their job than current Egyptologists, because they're farther from the Egypt.
I agree. Oh. That's totally true. Also, you couldn't make an Ankh. Ankh. Ankh.
I want to get back to Tawanda for a second. Her emblem she made had a lot of stuff going on. There was a peace symbol, and above that, a heart, and there were two strokes of lightning, and what she described as a plus sign.
Because of positivity above the heart. But it looked like a sacred heart with a cross on top.
You can't have a cross immediately above a heart and not have it be a sacred heart. Like, that's a symbol already.
That's a thing. People have those.
And it's fine if
I think the Virgin Mary has them, and she might not be people, but it is a thing.
Hospitals and paintings have them, I know that.
That's the truth.
And that can be your symbol, but I think that has to be what your character is about then, doesn't
it? Yeah, you should have... Yeah, and her character was just about peace, love, and friendship, I think.
Yeah. That's an interesting comparison. Her character was about peace, love, and friendship, whereas other guys were saying things like, in my head, every superhero needs two things, a long-range weapon and a close combat weapon.
And she's like, my superhero is a college student who's full of peace and love. So she did not fit in.
Yeah, I really...
Which I didn't mind, because I thought it was fun to see something different. But her costume, she never really was able to finish the sewing.
Yeah.
I think she had so many ideas going at once.
Well, I feel like if you're doing foam armor, you can do a couple of pieces and they stand on their own. But if you're making... I can't just say, here's a sleeve. There needs to be a whole garment attached
right,
to it.
Right, you can't just say, okay, here's a piece of fabric with a design on it. I'm going to sew that across the chest. That's different.
Yeah, it doesn't...
But I did like the stuff they showed when they were showing her work early on. Oh, yeah. She had gorgeous stuff.
I liked her, but she didn't do enough to get past the first round.
Right, so she went home. Our second round was build the rest of your costumes.
Yep, people got assignments to add things in the form of a random comic... Well, not quite a random comic book pick.
They had a choice of four comic books.
They were Black Widow, Superman, Batman, and Daredevil.
So the first guy grabs Batman, because
right?
Guys.
He gets utility belt. So now you're thinking, okay, whatever you pick, that hero will somehow...
Right. So then the next guy goes up and he picks Daredevil and he gets mask.
So the last guy has a choice between Superman and Black Widow. I was hoping for Black Widow.
I was like, well, if you choose Superman, it's a cape.
Yeah.
If you choose Black Widow, it's probably a holster or
a gun, maybe.
Boobs.
Boobs. A sequel. So he took Superman and got cape. And he was very worried because he'd never made a cape. He made a great cape.
Yeah, the cape he made was fantastic. It hung right. It was painted well.
Lot of really interesting folds, so even when he's not running around, it was cool
mm-hmm.
to look at.
Yeah, it was a great cape. He was so worried about it, and I was like, dude, just cut a piece of fabric into a rectangle
yeah.
and stick two corners and tie two corners together. Cape!
Yeah.
I learned that when I was a child.
Do one of those silly one-shoulder capes like Captain Marvel has.
Oh, yeah.
So, what do you got? I just want to jump to the finale.
Dare won for his Wildcat costume, which looked a lot like Black Panther, yeah. I thought.
He's got a lot of really good skills. Like, the second in there, he was demonstrating techniques no one else had ever heard of.
One thing I liked during this episode was I could see people stealing techniques
oh, yeah.
from other people. James came on and said, oh, you know, everybody uses googly eyes for their
rivets.
I just use thumbtacks. Just push a thumbtack in there. It's already metallic. You don't have to paint it. By the last round, everybody had thumbtack rivets.
Because if you're using foam, a lot of this foam's thick, that works great.
Dare was using a rock to push to form the hot EVA.
Yeah, to emboss it, and it looked amazing
and it
right
looked
away.
Incredible immediately.
Right. People's open-mindedness towards techniques is a cool thing about this show.
Right.
Like, nobody was like, that's stupid. What are you using a rock for? They said, what's that rock doing? Oh my God, I'm going to go find myself a rock.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. And I think our next show up is...
Forged in Fire. Wrap it up there. Where they had to make two push knives, which nobody makes, so everybody was very challenged by this.
How can you not make a push knife? They sell them at all the army surplus stores.
I mean, somebody makes them, but these guys don't. And one thing they immediately ran into is a push knife. So you have a horizontal handle that you grip onto, and the blade sticks out between two fingers.
Right.
Ideally, the middle two fingers, but if you're Doug Marcaida, you like it sticking out between your index and middle finger.
Right.
And he kind of complained a lot about people.
He complained about people making the knives that way, but come on, most of them had never made a push knife before, and that's what you would assume.
So the tricky part is, you need a very narrow spot between the knife and the handle. It needs to be narrow enough that it doesn't hurt your fingers, but not so narrow
that it breaks off.
Yeah, so there was a lot of tricky work in making sure that was just the right thickness and strength.
The four competitors this week were Jesse, who was kind of a big guy who said he has a bad temper, he's very loud, but he really likes working. There was a lady named Rochelle, who was awesome.
I'm going to say they were all kind of big people this time.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying she was a small lady. She's a blacksmith. Yeah.
She teaches at an outdoor survival school.
Yes. There was James, who is an ex-English teacher. And Paul, who is from Alaska, he is a third-generation smith. So when he goes back to his home forge, it's this really cool family forge that they've had for ages.
Yeah.
Although, which I thought was pretty cool.
He's only been forging for 7 years. They'd all been forging between 5 and 7 years, made it kind of an even playing field.
No, no, he said this was the third generation.
He,
I see what you mean.
His family has been doing it forever. He's been doing it for 7 years.
Okay, well, that's fine. I'll give him a break on that.
My favorite was James. I think yours was Rochelle.
Right. James claimed to be a neo-tribal metalsmith.
Yes. Well, he's an English teacher. That means he knows a lot of words. He's the one who took a snack break partway through the episode, just pulled out a box of trail mix, started munching on it. The judges seemed shocked. I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah, the judges were kind of horrified. But then Jesse, the other big, the big guy, had got really sick. And I don't know if it was heat stroke or a heart attack or what. But he should have taken a snack break because they took him away in an ambulance and we never heard from him again.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't say, oh, Jesse's feeling better. It was just, nope, gone, off the show, sorry.
Yeah, I would have liked to have...
had a little closure.
Yeah, like, Jesse's fine, everybody. We might try to have him back. Nope.
Nope, he's gone. So, let's see. Rochelle was doing everything by hand. She was hand hammering stuff. She wasn't using the big power hammers, which was pretty cool. And at one point, the drill bit she was using broke off and went over her safety goggles into her eye.
We think it was just a shard of metal, but still, rapidly moving metal into her eye. She was not fazed at all.
Nope, she walked over to the eye wash station, washed her eye out, said, I think I'm going to be okay, and went straight back to the anvil.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
There was no drama. She looked at the camera and said, I think I just got some metal in my eye. The medic caught up to her when she was done with the eye wash station. She's like, yeah, wash it up. I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm going back. Let's see, what else happened in this issue? Oh, they were having, James was having trouble during the, like, the second to final round because he was trying to sharpen his knife on a whetstone and it wasn't working. So he just took off his own belt and used it as a strop, which I thought was a great idea.
The judges didn't like that, but I thought it was a very sensible idea.
I don't think they didn't dislike it. They just seemed shocked by it.
Now,
they're awfully easily shocked for men who work with hot metal all the time.
James, although he's a former English teacher, struck me as somebody who has made a lot of knives because he specifically picked a handle material on the grounds that it won't crack when you drill through it, which is a real good thing to think about.
Some people were choosing handle materials because they look nice, and he was like, just performance. I want one that's not going to, that I'm not going to have to remake. It's not going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go with what's easy.
Meanwhile, Paul had a little trouble with his handle while he was drilling through it, and then it got stuck on the drill bit and started spinning around.
And
with
the knife was still in it. It was a death machine.
That didn't look good.
Let's see.
So then they had a denim bag slice and a sheet steel punch, and naturally we don't need to explain what those common things are.
No, of course not. Everybody's done a denim bag slice. Sometimes at the disco.
Yeah. Nobody had two really good push knives, I thought.
No, but they all managed to get through. I don't remember who went home.
Rochelle went home
because she, the tip of her knife broke off, and it was because it had been overheated in the forge.
Yeah, she still did well in the challenges, but just the very end of the tip broke, and...
Yeah.
Sorry. So that meant we had James and Paul, and they made a type of sword I did not write down.
I may have written it down.
Did you?
I'm looking.
I don't think you did.
I didn't.
It was a type of sword, kind of looked like a broadsword.
Carried by the Land Connect, doesn't have a pointy tip, has a rounded tip. Very sharp all around.
Well, it has a bit of a point, because they stabbed something with it.
It looks like that.
Well, I realize your diagram doesn't have a point. It does have a fuller, which is the groove
I always
on
thought
the sides.
That was a blood groove.
Yeah, apparently.
But apparently it's called a fuller.
It's there to provide lightness.
Oh, sure. So they went back to their home. Paul went to his family forge up in Alaska.
And James went to his forge in Texas. A lot of these guys live in big open spaces where you can set fires without bothering your neighbors.
Yeah. Let's see, anything else? I noted that James has named his power hammer Gunhilda.
Yeah, James made an entirely utilitarian sword. A lot of times you get guys who first thought is, I'm going to do a million layers of Damascus, it's going to look amazing, I'm going to do this cool walnut handle. He had none of that. It was just, this is the best steel I could find. This is the best handle I could find. This is a modern version of this old sword.
Right.
And I respect that.
Was that James or Paul?
I believe that was James.
James, right. Paul used the family forge. His blade looked homemade.
Yeah. So, the tests were, one, we're firing a bullet at your sword.
Which hardly seems fair to me. This is a medieval weapon. What is that? Is not a realistic test of combat skills.
They've done it before, and as before, the swords all survived.
Yeah.
This bullet splits in two. Everybody goes, wow, that was amazing.
And they each had a tiny bit of edge damage, but it was an identical amount.
Yeah.
And it was so tiny, they were like, well, I think that's some damage.
And some of it was, oh, a bit of your bullet was left on the sword.
Yeah.
So then they did the pig chop. Now, this no, is...
First, oh. They did the hanging bag chop.
Okay, describe the hanging bag chop.
That's where you get a hanging bag.
Okay.
What kind of a bag was it? It's a punching bag.
Yeah, one of those heavy punching bags.
And they slash at it to make sure that the edge of the sword is sharp enough to slash. And then they do a puncture with it to make sure the pointy part of the sword is pointy.
The what now?
The rounded end of the sword.
They did pretty much the same. James a little better. Paul's kind of had trouble digging in, although...
Yeah, Paul's did not...
So then they did the pig part.
Paul's, I believe he said it will still cut.
Yeah.
But not deeply.
Now, the pig thing is, they have a whole pig hanging from a rope. And Doug Marqueta is going to chop into it with a sword. Now, we've seen this before with the claymores, where we have seen a total of 4 claymores attack a hanging pig. And of those, 1 claymore broke.
One wrapped around the pig as though it were made of, like, some hilarious prank metal.
It came away with a 90-degree turn.
Yeah.
One sprawled into it and then came back to true. And then one terrifying one sliced through the pig like it was butter.
Yeah. Bones, everything. So the pig challenge is always the most terrifying because they do often use ballistic dummies with, like, fake blood in them. But we all know that a pig is as close to a human body as you're going to get.
So when he's swinging the sword at a pig, you can think, that's what would happen if that sword came at me.
Yes.
Paul's bounced off the pig.
Yeah, it didn't even dent the pig. It didn't cut the skin. It did nothing.
That's a problem.
It just bounced.
In my opinion, the problem was edge geometry.
Oh, you and your fancy words that you learned from watching this show.
They talk so much about edge geometry.
Edge geometry is very important.
It is.
I don't know exactly what it is, but it's very important.
I think it's the slope of the point, whether it stays narrow or whether it gets really thick or whether maybe there's multiple angles.
That's probably it. Either way, it's got geometry in it, so it's very complicated.
Right. James's sword, however... cut right through that pig's spine.
Yeah, like it was nothing.
It did not go all the way through the pig, but it went like 7/8 of the way through the pig.
Yes, it was pretty terrifying.
And then the judges said, well, we're going to have to deliberate. They did not have to deliberate.
They did not have to deliberate. Let's see, one guy's sword worked and one didn't. Let's talk about this for a while.
Let's check our stats. Doug, what did you say about James? It will kill. What did you say about Paul? It will not kill. Well, I think we've got a pretty clear result. But let's talk about the bullets some more. Oh, okay.
So anyway.
Very solid.
James won.
I really like the pig chopping because it's a test that we've seen swords fail at. Like, before this show... I had mostly just seen swords being used in movies and stuff where they always cut through people.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know a steel claymore could break when it hits somebody.
No, I had no idea that these things could happen.
But, so that makes it more impressive when it looks like it happened in a movie.
Right.
Like, in Highlander, people are just lopping heads off left and right. This is a sword that I think could actually do that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, James won. Paul would like... Paul came back after James's win to congratulate him. He would also like all of you ladies out there to know that he's a very good dancer, and he lives in Alaska and is very lonely.
I love that.
I thought that was awesome.
You're on television. You got he anything else like, you want to say?
He seemed like a nice guy. I know that there's not a lot of ladies up in Alaska, especially in the isolated place he lives. Might as well give it a shot.
Yeah. And that is the shows we watch that we feel like talking about.
Yes.
I think we also watch MasterChef Junior and Amazing Race, and I remember nothing about them and don't care.
Nah, I don't care about those either. Sorry, kids and racers.
I do have one final thing to say about The Amazing Race.
Ooh.
This series, according to TiVo, is called The Amazing Race 29. Dear The Amazing Race, don't change the name of your series between seasons. It means season passes don't pick them up.
Right. We missed a whole episode.
What are you, dumb?
Yeah, you want your show to be featured on our podcast? You don't change the name.
This also goes for anybody doing an all-star season. RuPaul's Drag Race had an all-star season, and it was called RuPaul's All-Star Drag Race or something. You know, it's Face Off. It's just called Face Off with an all-star season.
Right.
Don't make... I have turned over much of my television planning to the TiVo. It does the thinking. If you have a new name for your show, I don't know about it.
Yeah. Don't just rename your show and then put it on there if you want to be featured on this podcast, baby.
And I feel like I pay more attention to reality shows than most people. So if I'm not noticing it, imagine what normals think.
Exactly.
What a pleasant way to end the episode.
Hey, we like to end on complaints.
Look, don't judge us for what we watch. Judge us for how we watch it.
Which apparently is angrily this week.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye.